Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
There has been chaotic scenes in parts of the United Arab Emirates this week after the country witnessed the heaviest rainfall in 75 years. In Dubai, more than 18 months of rain fell in just a few hours, causing flash flooding and disruption, which is ongoing at the city's airport. Now, it was a freak event in a country that typically experiences little rainfall, but it raised questions about how well equipped we are to deal with the threat posed by extreme weather and rising sea levels. Well, one solution my next guest has been looking at is the development of floating homes and indeed cities. His name is Cohen Altheus and he's an architect with Water Studio in the Netherlands. Good morning, Cohen.
Good morning.
Lovely to have you with us. This idea, this notion of floating cities, it might seem a little far-fetched, but it is something that both you and your colleagues there are working towards, isn't it?
Yes, correct. Already for almost 20 years. We started in 2003 with building some floating houses in Amsterdam. And then through the years, we saw that these kind of solutions could be applicable on every city that is close to the water and is threatened by sea level rise or by even urbanization, because those two go hand in hand. Urbanization needs space and climate change takes space with the water. So if you can combine then these problems with and solutions for floating cities or floating neighborhoods, and then that's a match.
So how close are we to reaching that point where higher density floating structures, including cities, might be a possibility and then a reality?
Yeah, well, I think the tipping point is close. We have some floating neighborhoods in the Netherlands, around 20, each carrying like 20 to 60 floating houses, but they're still single floating family houses. But at this point, we're also busy in the Maldives, and the Maldives is in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And there's a plan for 5,000 floating houses, and they are in a higher density. So also floating apartment buildings up to 3-4 stories high. And then because the economy of scale, they become much more affordable. So I think it's really something we'll see in the next 10 years, 15 years in many cities around the world. And it's not because we like the architecture, it's because there is a need for space and there's a threat of the water.
So the problems then that you will have to deal with will be around infrastructure, won't they? Around connections to roads, to ports, to trains, to traditional sewage infrastructure, electricity and so on. How does all of that work?
Yeah, well, that seems more difficult than it is in reality, because you have to see it almost like a kind of harbour. If you have a big cruise ship that docks to a harbour, then also the connections with electricity and with water and sewage is with flexible pipes. As we do the same with these kind of floating neighbourhoods. They are close to the grid and we pump sewage back to the grid. It's more difficult when we go to open waters. For instance, in Maldives, it's in the more self-sustainable and we are autonomous. So we have to make our own energy, we have to make our own water and treat our own sewage. But also these systems are just available in the market. It's just a matter of scaling up.
How difficult is it to build in water and above water?
Well, building in water is quite difficult. So that's not what we do. We build these kind of structures on land in harbors, and then we move them on big cargo ships to the location. Then we put it in the water and then we assemble it and then it's ready to go. Maybe you're more focused on the foundation itself. Well, the foundation, they are made from concrete boxes, large concrete boxes. And they float the same that the steel ship floats. Also a concrete ship can float. And if you make the ship not in a V shape, but in a box shape, then you have your foundation for your floating houses. And on water, it is the bigger, the better. So a small house on water, of course, it moves with every waves. But if you have large platforms from 50 by 100 meters, then they become quite stable. And of course, then you still have to find the locations where you have as minimal waves as possible. And for instance, in the Maldives, we have lagoons. The lagoons are kind of reefs, coral reefs that take the wind and the waves out of the middle of that lagoon. So that's quite good water to build these kind of floating developments in.
Mm-hmm. And what about the environmental impact of such structures?
Yeah, that's key. That it always starts with the environmental impact assessment. So depending on the depth of the water, the existing ecosystem, we can just calculate how much and how large these buildings and platforms can be. And in the last 5 years, we see a change. It's no longer to make something that has not an impact, but we try to have a positive impact. So with the local ecologist, we're going to look what they think should be the ideal situation. And then we try to have our artificial coral underneath these platforms or ecosystems underneath the platforms to enhance the environment over there.
And you mentioned the Maldives and the Netherlands, of course, but are you finding that there are parts of the world, Cohen, that are just more receptive to this sort of innovation than others?
Mostly the places where there is a real threat. Where it becomes a reality, where it's not just fun or freak architecture, but there where rivers grow fast with flash floods, or where we have cities very close to the water not finding space, that there's the places that are, of course, looking for new solutions, and then water and floating structures can be one of the solutions. We always say we are not really architects or urban planners. We are much more city doctors, and we use water as our medicine. And we really believe that a city that is threatened by the water, but also by inflexibility of the functionality of the city, can take advantage of these kind of floating platforms, which can be moved and replaced and adjusted much faster than a static city on land.
Mm-hmm. You'd wonder, though, you know, is this really the solution? We have overpopulated our land, so our solution to that is to build on the sea.
I don't believe it's the solution. I think it's part of the recipe towards the solution. And you have to see it in the whole evolution of the city. Yeah, like 100 years ago, 150 years ago, we got electricity, we got high-rise buildings, we got a car, and all these kind of technologies have changed the livability in the city. And now the next stage, the next step is, I think, water and floating structures, which make the city even larger and more flexible, and by that better.
And what about the cost then? I mean, I would imagine the countries and regions that need this type of design most are the ones that will struggle with the additional cost, because I assume it's more expensive to build in this way.
No, definitely, it's more expensive. At this point, it's 10 to 15% more expensive than the same building you would build on land. But I don't think you should look only at the cost of construction. You should look also at the cost of development. That means how much do you pay for land, how much do you pay for water, and then you place the structure on top of it. And if you see that number, then floating developments are not more expensive than the ones on land. So I also think that economy of scale, and now we have built like a few hundred of these houses per year. But if we move up to maybe 2 or 5% of the house being built in the city that can be brought on water, then of course costs will go down rapidly. So hopefully then once we have reached that tipping point, it's just another way of building a city. I mean, not longer looking at the technology, but more at how it can make the city perform better.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we'll need specially trained architects and engineers and then the labour force to carry out those plans.
Yes, but that's also not new, because an architect 20 years ago, 50 years ago, had different skills than they have today. And even if you see now how AI is influencing the architects, we have to be faster, we have to be more flexible, and at our company we see now that it's not only the creative guys but also the guy who can program the architecture. So it's very exciting. Mm-hmm. And that also shows how I think that the city of the future would look like, a city where elements can move from one part to another part, and where AI is steering this whole dynamic city.
Well, can you explain that to me, how AI is feeding into this model of design?
Well, see the cities here in Europe. In the winter it's very cold, in the summer it's very warm, and still we have exactly the same city. If you would build a neighborhood on water, you can make a seasonal city. That means that in the summer, maybe there's much more water. You push all these platforms away from each other. There's more space in the middle. In the winter, they come closer. There's more warmth. It's more protected. So you respond to the climate, you respond to the seasons, and you respond to demand of the population. So it's and by that, of course, it's not that the architects say, okay, well, this platform should be there and that function should be there. But it's AI that helps us to bring the ideal balance, ideal recipe for that neighbourhood.
Mm-hmm. I have a listener here who tells me that he worked in the North Sea in the UK and the Norwegian areas. There are practical floating cities of oil rigs and production platforms with thousands of workers living on them.
Yes,
some of the platforms, absolutely. He says, are secured on the seabed or are floating structures. So he's telling you and verifying that this can be done and is being done.
Yes, he's totally true. And we always have taken this kind of offshore industry as an example. The only problem is that they pay billions to build these kind of structures. And if you would do that for just normal housing, that doesn't end up in a feasible project. So we try to learn from these projects and make it more feasible for the waters within our cities. And of course, we're lucky that the waters inside London, but also in Miami, New York, Shanghai, Tokyo, are not as severe as on the North Sea, which is extreme weather. But actually, we are now at this point, we are building floating towers in Norway. We do that in a fjord. And also in that fjord, we have less waves and extreme weather than we see on the North Sea. But to give you an answer, yes, it's an example of technology that we learn from.
It's been fascinating to talk to you, Cohen. Thank you very much for speaking to us this morning. Cohen Altheus is an architect with Water Studio in the Netherlands.